Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name's Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. It's a real pleasure today to welcome Brooks Bentz to the podcast. Brooks has long been a contributing editor for Logistics Management and a good friend of the magazine and Peerless Media. In his day job, Brooks is a senior consultant for Breakthrough Supply Chain LLC. Brooks has a long and storied career in the freight transportation, logistics, and supply chain sectors, having started his career back in 1969 as a brakeman on what was then called the New Haven Railroad. Brooks then worked in railroading for most of the next 20 years, ending as a VP in intermodal for the BN, and then also started two trucking companies ancillary to intermodal business and spent time running a 3PL company. If Brooks's resume isn't extensive enough, he also has subsequently since then spent the second half of his career in various consulting roles, including the former Anderson Consulting, which became Accenture, and then he ran supply chain consulting for Transplace in recent years before joining Breakthrough in 2018. Brooks, welcome to today's podcast. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Glad to be here and getting reacquainted, even though it's in a virtual environment.
Absolutely. Well, Brooks, just to get things started, you can't sort of help but not start with the topic of COVID-19 as it relates to supply chain, logistics, freight operations. Since we've all been in this weird new world, so to speak, going back, back to mid-May, so we're basically at the three month point or so. When you think of the impact of COVID on everything related to our industries, how would you sort of assess or describe what's happening or what has happened?
Well, I think, you know, it's a brand new world that we're in, and nobody alive today, that's at least in the working world, can remember the last time we had anything remotely like this. You know, you have to go back to the Spanish flu probably to get something that is even close to what we have now. And, you know, that's 1918 or so. So it's a brand new world, and we're charting the course as we go, making it up as we go along. And this one is particularly daunting because we don't know very much about it, and there's no ready cure for it. So we don't know that it's going to continue, whether it's going to resurge, in the fall with the flu season. So I think people are finding it extremely difficult to plan ahead as to what they're going to do relative to what might be a peak season, say, in retail. I think there's pent-up demand. People are frustrated in being, you know, stuck either at home or out of the office. I guess the other part of that is that we're probably going to see some sea change in the way businesses operate after this is over, in the sense that there's probably going to be a lot more of remote working. It's certainly cost effective in many ways. That doesn't help people that need to run distribution centers and distribute product. But I think it's a good time to start to understand what resilience in supply chains really means and how to respond to unplanned events, whether they're viruses or floods or hurricanes. And I think we've had a lot more practice in the sort of natural disasters that come along. This one is a completely new experience. And it is going to, I think, fundamentally change the way people buy transportation and utilize it. And it remains to be seen how that's going to play out. And obviously, it's going to be different if you're mining coal in the Powder River Basin or producing pharmaceuticals or retail products.
Right. Great point. So with that as a backdrop, Brooks, and you talked about resilience, which has been a key theme of late in a lot of the things we read and hear as it relates to COVID's impact on the supply chain. For the shippers out there, how, in your opinion, should they sort of be approaching supply chain and logistics operations? I guess looking back, to when this started, and perhaps in a post-COVID world, whenever that may be. If you could sort of identify just some of the things they should be focusing on or really paying close attention to, what would those types of things be?
Well, I think one of the good outcomes of things like this is you always get you get innovation that you might not have otherwise had. And so we will see things coming out of this that might have taken longer to develop, or finding new ways to do things in response to this that we might not have otherwise done. And I think the thing that is, you know, that people in supply chain today have that people in the past did not have is much greater access to and capabilities with technology and visibility to what's going on across the supply chain, whether it's having to do with weather or traffic congestion or where product is, things like that. So the business intelligence aspect, I think, is going to get much more heavily emphasized than it even has in the past. And we're going to develop more and more capabilities along those lines. It's probably going to advance the cause of things like self-driving vehicles or semi-self-driving vehicles.
Sure.
I think there's it's a interesting dynamic because supply chain, as we've talked about, used to be something called the traffic department in many shippers. And it was usually a place where people who couldn't do much else got relegated to, or they happened to have an ICC practitioner's license and they knew rate tariffs and regulations and things like that. And it's morphed into a much broader application today. I think the real change agent that took it from and also ran into much more prime time was the advent of Amazon. I mean, if you look at them, and everybody looks at them, if you look at them, they basically are a supply chain company, right? There's nothing that they sell you can't buy from somebody else. And what they've what they've done is been able to weaponize supply chain to basically go out and make themselves the 900 pound gorilla. It's more like the 9 million pound gorilla by simply executing extremely well and making it extremely easy and painless to not only do business with them to buy things, but also the reverse logistics part, which is always difficult for customers. It's always been a pain in the neck to, particularly in retail, to return product. Amazon makes it so simple and so painless that I think it's instructional in the way that, you know, people are starting to look at supply chains as a competitive advantage rather as just a backroom function that's a necessary evil of getting product off the dock.
No question about it. And, I think in certain cases too, and I know we've talked about this over the years, Brooks, there's sort of if I'm a shipper, regardless of size, say mid to large enterprise shipper, do I handle everything in house? Do I outsource to a 3PL or a logistics services partner, so to speak? What I'm getting at is the role of partnerships or collaboration, if you will, the tried and true term that we always hear at industry conferences and trade shows. How would you sort of define what makes a successful relationship or partnership or collaboration or whatever you want to call it that's mutually beneficial for both the shipper and the services provider, especially within today's climate?
Yeah, I think there is a few key ingredients. One is the shipper doing the proper due diligence on a third-party provider of services. And the next is having flexibility in the business model so that you don't have to outsource everything. It can be a blended model of some things are outsourced and some aren't. I think the non-value-added functions are easy things to outsource. You know, why pay people to do repetitive functions that in-house when you can outsource them to a third party who can do them probably more efficiently? I think the other part of it is having a very good, trusting relationship with your third-party provider so that, you feel like they're acting in your best interest. I think one of the challenges is that a shipper will go out and source a third-party provider for whatever services they may be looking for, and whether it's running a DC or running transportation functions. And, you know, the first year of that, almost every third-party provider can find, you know, 10% savings, right? And the second year that drops to, you know, 4%. And the third year, it's like there aren't any more to be found. Yeah. And what happens is, oh, well, let's go out. You know, we're not getting a benefit from these guys anymore. Let's go find somebody else. And you start the ball all over again. I think the third-party business was more of a transactional business for quite a while. Companies like Transplace, I think, really took it to the next level with turning into technology providers of some magnitude, right? Excellence in technology and the ability to execute on behalf of their clients. And those kinds of things are really important to do as well. So I think, you know, do the evaluation up front, find the right partner that does what you want to do. You know, if you're in the mining business, don't pick somebody who is really good in retail. You know, if you're in the chemicals business, don't pick somebody who's, you know, is really good in automotive. I mean, you think you can each one of these guys has an area that, you know, there's probably not much they can't do, but there are areas of specialty that they really excel in. And I think those things have to be part of the due diligence process. And then getting senior management involved in endorsing and supporting the cause. And, you know, those things are all important to getting it done right. And then the last element is you can't outsource something with a contract and throw it over the fence and expect it to just operate smoothly, right? You have to be actively engaged. And I think there's a disparity oftentimes from supply chain people who see outsourcing as a threat in some instances and do it unwillingly because they've been told to. And really what it is having to manage your operations differently, more strategically, but still staying involved, right? You can't just say, okay, all that's done and I don't have to worry about it anymore. It's really an interactive process.
Okay. All right, great. So Brooks, with our remaining time, I just wanted to touch base, and you had alluded to it earlier in our talk, just about peak season. I mean, given what's been happening with COVID and reduced demand and sort of what the West Coast port volumes have collectively been telling us in recent months, it stands to reason that any type of traditional semblance of a real fall peak shipping season is sort of probably not going to happen based on the sentiment of many industry stakeholders. And I'm just wondering if you could weigh in on that as well to sort of give our audience a sense of what may or may not be happening on that front.
Yeah, I think the comments you've been getting are probably right on. I find it difficult to believe that we're going to have the, you know, what was historically known as peak season and then referred to later on as peep season, because it really kind of eviscerated itself by people spreading acquisition of product out over a longer period of time and so forth. So I find it difficult to believe we're going to have a large surge when we typically would have it, which is, you know, late summer, early fall. That said, I think there is a lot of pent up demand. But, you know, a lot of people are satisfying that by online purchasing. And I think once, you know, if you haven't done that before and you get into the habit of doing it, you realize, wow, it's really pretty easy to do a lot of things that way. I've noticed that, you know, Amazon, for example, even offers subscription services so that, you know, you can have auto replenishment of products that you use on a regular basis. So I think the game is going to change. I think that's going to mean a continued increase in reliance on parcel carriers like UPS and FedEx as shipment sizes, you know. Nobody orders a truckload of Pampers to their residents. You know, you order a carton of it. And so I think we're going to see a semi-permanent shift, which is going to impact both the LTL and the truckload business, probably more the truckload business. But, you know, I think that's what happens, right, in circumstances like this. There are shifts that become tectonic. We just don't realize it until after the fact. I think the new normal will not be the old normal. And people say, I'm going to get back to normal. Well, you know, I think it's going to be different from what it has been.
Yeah, it's hard to see it not being the case in that way. Well, listen, Brooks, this has been great. We're at the end of our time for today's podcast, and I just want to extend a big thank you again for joining us today.
Delighted to be here, Jeff, as always. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thanks again, Brooks. And for all of you out there, thanks for listening. And be sure to check out Logistics Management as well on Twitter at LogisticsMGMT. And if you'd like to subscribe to our podcast, check us out at Supply Chain 24/7, wherever you get podcasts. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.